It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I'm sure you've heard it by now. Vote, make your voice heard. And at this point, I'm sure you're thinking, why bother? Why take 30 minutes out of your day to stand in line with strangers when at the end of it all, one vote is just a drop in the bucket? It's just one little vote out of millions and millions, and it doesn't really make a difference. Your voice by itself amounts to nothing more than a whisper, right? So maybe you knew this, maybe you didn't, but there's 90 million committed Christians in the United States, and only about 51 million of them vote in any given election. Maybe the other 39 million are thinking what you're thinking. It's just one vote, so why bother? Perhaps one vote doesn't seem like a lot, but 90 million votes are. If 90 million like-minded Christians will cast their votes on Election Day, all those little drops will fill the bucket, and all those little whispers will add up to a very loud voice that will be heard and make a difference. So don't fool yourself into thinking that your vote doesn't matter, because it does. But what matters even more is who you influence to vote with you. It really comes down to faith and action. If all the Christians in America start joining their voices and their vote together, one by one, multiplied across the nation, we can change the course of our country. So make sure you vote. But first, you have to register. If you're not registered, you can't vote. Register today at www.championthevote.com. It will take less than 2 minutes. And then, make sure you vote.
All right, Sandy Rios, I started this show with that on purpose because we are coming into a crucial time. We are less than 60 days from the election of the next president of the United States, plus senators, plus congressmen. And could I say, as I say every day, they're not doing so well here. We sort of need help. We need to make some really wise choices. We are at a tipping point in almost every area. That's a really nice little clip done by Champion the Vote. You heard them identify themselves. And AFA Action, of course, is partnering with this. We have our own commercials and ways of helping you. If you go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net, and click on Pledge to Vote, it'll show you what you have to do. And I encourage each and every one of you, if you haven't registered, please register. If you have friends and family and neighbors who haven't registered, please tell them they must vote in this election. They cannot stay agnostic. They can't stay home. They can't say, oh, we'll wait till next time, because there may not be a next time. Now, I heard a briefing yesterday that would have frightened you, because it frightened me. And the briefing went something like this. We'll get into it in more detail when the full report comes out. But I found out yesterday that because of motor voter, that the fraud in our voting booths has become so deeply entrenched in the system that it will be almost impossible to stop voter fraud. Now, we talk a lot about, you know, people not being citizens and coming in to vote, people voting multiple times, busing in people to vote in areas where they're not authorized to vote, certain precincts, all the kinds of things that we've heard traditionally. But this is different. This time, because of the motor voter system, which, by the way, Senator Barack Obama pushed in the state of Illinois, he is the one that got this all started. It's to his credit. So that when people in those long lines at the DMV come in to get their driver's licenses, they also register to vote. And that is the source of much of our fraud. But it seems to be, even when people in various states have brought cases in court trying to clean up the voter rolls, trying to compare whether people are citizens to a list, there is an actual known list of legal immigrants who are not citizens, who are not eligible to vote. There is a list of them, but the federal government is refusing to allow people who are trying to purge the voter rolls to compare those two lists. People that have a driver's license, people that are here legally but are not citizens. There's no check on that. And so we're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of votes that are going to take place in this coming election, which will not be legal. And could I just interject something important? I think that if you see a different administration and a different Justice Department, any of you that are contemplating voting illegally, encouraging others to do that, any people or persons in office cooperating with expediting and encouraging illegal voting might have something to worry about. So I'm just saying don't do it. And I'm saying for those of you who are full-blown, full-throated citizens of the United States of America, the only way to neutralize this is for you to vote. Now, if you don't care about what's happening to the country, or if this does not disturb you, then, you know, business as usual, like in the last few elections, as was described on that little clip, that so many, certainly evangelical voters, just don't bother. And so please don't be one of those. Please don't be one of those. And, you know, check in your own state to see if there's early voting. I don't like early voting. I think it's unconstitutional. But since they have it, do it. Just make sure that you get the job done, and also that you tell others, people in your church. You can go to afaaction.net, and pledge to vote. All right, so that's the first part. Now, last night, Ed Henry gave us an update on the race, which I thought was interesting. Let's listen.
Good morning, ladies. What's interesting is this is a whole new race, with Donald Trump surging to the lead over Hillary Clinton as questions loom over her physical health, which may be part of the reason why she's racing back out onto the campaign trail today after taking 3 full days off. Clinton has some ground to make up. A new CNN ORC poll shows in the key state of Ohio, Trump has now opened a 5-point lead, 46% to 41%. You can see there with Libertarian Gary Johnson getting 8%, Jill Stein of the Green Party at 2%. The same poll in Florida, another key state, obviously has Trump also in the lead, 47% to 44%, obviously within the margin of error, but he had been behind Johnson and Stein getting smaller shares. The point is, Clinton had the upper hand. All of a sudden, that's changing, and they're swinging these battlegrounds in Trump's direction as he went on the Dr. Oz show to release some of his medical records. Meanwhile, former President Bill Clinton, he slipped up again with comments about his wife's health as he filled in for her on the trail watch.
If elected at age 70, you'll be the oldest person to ever enter the Oval Office. Why do you think you have the stamina for the job?
Yeah, just about the same age as Ronald Reagan, and Hillary's a year behind me. I would say, just based on my life, I mean, I don't know if this makes sense, I feel as good today as I did when I was 30.
I just talked to her. She's feeling great, and I think she'll be back out there tomorrow. It's a crazy time we live in, you know, when people think there's something unusual about getting the flu. Last time I checked, millions of people were getting it every year.
Now, the Clinton camp quickly clarified he meant the candidate has pneumonia, not the flu, just days after the former president told CBS News his wife has frequently fainted before correcting himself to say only occasionally she faints. The slip-up edited out of CBS's first airing of that clip.
All right, so that's the first part of Ed's report. And, you know, certainly Mrs. Clinton has had some very damning events in this past 10 days. Not only her, you know, problem at 9/11, having to leave the ceremony, and her very strange lifting into the van and all of it, and the speculation about how seriously ill she might be, but also her willful revelation of who she really is on Friday night at the LGBT fundraiser sponsored by Barbara Streisand, when she called Trump supporters, half of them at least, a basket of deplorables. Islamophobic, xenophobic, you know, homophobic. That's kind of the way she said it, speaking from her heart, maybe. And so those are damning things, and they are shifting the polls. But nevertheless, Mrs. Clinton is still ahead. And she certainly is ahead in the Electoral College, even though things are tightening. This is going to be a very close race. And I don't think there's anything that the left won't do to prevail. There's so much at stake for them. They've almost succeeded in fundamentally transforming the United States of America, no doubt about it. And they just need a couple more years, just a few more, just maybe just another term. and it'll be in the bag and irreversible. And so there are some, there's some reports this morning. This is from bigstory.ap.org that the Republicans are gaining grounds in voter demonstration in some key states. And I'm not, you know, I'm not even going to lay that out because I've already told, yes, they're doing, Republicans are doing pretty well in registering voters, but it's Mrs. Clinton is still ahead in the Electoral College and she's still ahead nationally in the polls. So it's a very interesting situation. I want to make sure I get this story in because you may recall that when Mrs. Clinton got in trouble for her using her private email server, she said, "Why, I've just been doing what others have been doing." And this is how that sounded.
Colin Powell's emails were retroactively classified from more than 10 years ago.
Right.
As he said, that was an absurdity. I could not agree more. I echo Colin Powell in this. Release it. And once the American people see it, they will know how absurd this is. So okay. Colin Powell and I are exactly on the same page.
What we didn't know was behind the scenes, Colin Powell was splitting a gasket over her claims. Let's listen to Jennifer Griffin's report.
New emails were published by a website favored by suspected Russian hackers. This time targeted the private emails of former Secretary of State Colin Powell. He calls Trump a, quote, national disgrace and an international pariah who led a racist birther movement against President Obama. But it is what Powell wrote about Hillary Clinton, who many expected him to endorse this fall, that is getting attention, accusing her and her aides of dragging him into her email scandal. Quote, everything HRC touches, she kind of screws up with hubris, adding, I've told Hillary's minions repeatedly that they are making a mistake trying to drag me in, yet they still try. The media isn't fooled, and she is getting crucified, Powell wrote in May. But the one that raised the most eyebrows was when Powell wrote, quote, I would rather not have to vote for her, although she is a friend I respect, a 70-year-old person with a long track record, unbridled ambition, greedy, not transformational, with a husband still blanking bimbos at home. The Clinton campaign declined to comment. In a statement to Fox News, Powell's office confirmed the emails were his, adding they did not plan to comment further. Bill Clinton referenced his wife's email practices at a campaign stop in Nevada, comparing them to those of Condoleezza Rice.
Secretary Rice didn't do email, smart girl.
In an email to NBC's Andrea Mitchell about what he told Hillary Clinton about his own email use, Powell wrote, quote, I told her how I used my personal computer for emails. I said nothing about servers, basements, domains, Clinton Foundation, government employees. The Clintonistas have been trying for months to connect our usage. Powell even commented on the state of Clinton's health more than a year ago. Quote, on HDTV, she doesn't look good. She is working herself to death. He also seemed aggrieved about her speaking fees. Quote, I told you about the gig I lost at a university because she so overcharged them they came under heat and couldn't find any fees for a while. I should send her a bill.
Well, that's an amazing report, Jennifer Griffin. And there's a lot more, too. There are more Colin Powell email. And he's saying, yeah, those are my email. This is one of them in regard to Hillary Clinton saying that she just did what Colin Powell did. He says, sad thing, Hillary Rodham Clinton could have killed this 2 years ago by merely telling everyone honestly what she had done and not tie me to it. I told her staff three times not to try that gambit. I had to throw a mini tantrum at a Hamptons party to get their attention. She keeps tripping into these character minefields. Well, it's just interesting, isn't it? What an interesting time we live in. No privacy, and yet, you know, we want privacy, and yet when some things like this are revealed, we're glad, sort of, are we? The point is, and that is that Mrs. Clinton isn't necessarily liked even by people that you would think would support her. You know, Colin Powell supported Barack Obama, even though he's a Republican. He still is. He loves the president. Go figure. But Hillary Clinton, not so much. All right, we're going to take a break. I have so much to tell you, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really, the Garden Tomb and Calvary. and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Or visit the website twholyland.com.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Are you aware many men struggle in the aftermath of abortion? According to research, 8% of men are seriously damaged emotionally. This means nearly 5 million men are walking wounded, with millions more affected to lesser degrees. We have a website to help these hurting fathers. MenAndAbortion.net can refer a man to free peer-to-peer counselors anywhere in the nation. There are videos and books, healing Bible studies, research, and more. Men need to know they're not alone and there's help for them. MenAndAbortion.net is the place for them to begin their journey back to wholeness. Please pray more hurting fathers of aborted babies will reach out and connect with the help they need. Once again, the address is MenAndAbortion.net.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. More American jobs are heading across our southern border. Ford announced it's shifting all of its small car production from the United States to Mexico. The Detroit Free Press reports some 2,800 jobs are expected to be created south of the border. Ford says they want to simplify production and save money. One way to do that is through cheap labor in a foreign country. The job migration should take about 3 years. No telling how many American jobs will be lost in the process. But this is one reason why Donald Trump is doing so well among working-class Americans. He is the only candidate who has consistently addressed a major issue: big business shifting American jobs across the border at the expense of the American working man and working woman. We send jobs to Mexico, and Mexico sends us illegals. Doesn't sound like a fair trade to me. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Well, with regard to Syria, I do think that it's a mess.
Well, I know you've heard that clip, right? Because it's not new. But that's Gary Johnson, one of the candidates for president of the United States, former governor of New Mexico, who loves, just loves him some marijuana. Loves it. And I just think it's, you know, kind of ironic that what is Aleppo? He's just so happy all the time. When he's interviewed, he's such a happy dude. And so I thought about that when I heard Alicia Acuna, her report on the legalization of marijuana in other states besides Colorado and the District of Columbia. Let's listen.
Since legalization of marijuana, retailers in Colorado and Washington State have sold more than $3 billion worth of pot. Attractive numbers for tax collectors, but some warn it comes at a cost.
School counselors are talking about the devastation it's causing in the schools, kids coming back from lunch loaded.
Tom Gorman, director of a law enforcement task force, says voters debating legalization in other states should consider security and reputation. Denver police recently tripled the number of police officers downtown, a direct response to pot-related crimes.
The marijuana that is currently available, particularly in the two states that have decriminalized, is not grandma's or grandpa's marijuana.
Dr. Ivor Douglas at Denver Health Medical Center says he is seeing more users who have chronic bronchitis, and much more research is needed at the federal level.
I am very worried about the impact on our youth. I have teenage kids. I worry about this.
Since the beginning of the year, Colorado state regulators have issued more than a dozen recalls on marijuana plants for unapproved pesticides. At the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo in Los Angeles, where the industry recently showed off new technology, speakers say the speed at which they are expanding is proof the product is going mainstream.
Right now, the industry is too big of a beast to contain. The caliber of investors and operators that are involved in this industry, not that it forces them, but they, at some point they do have to respond to it.
Colorado and Washington State were the first with recreational marijuana in 2012. Since then, Alaska, Oregon, and the District of Columbia have also legalized. Voters in five more states will consider it in November. Add states that allow it for medical purposes, the map's more colored in.
A majority of the polling in the five states show voters are for it. Brett.
Okay, well, all right, we got it clipped off. You know, when I think of that, I've already expressed repeatedly at this microphone my literal hatred of marijuana. What I've seen it do to friends, classmates, peers, I hate it. Makes them stupid. You know, you too could be a presidential candidate who doesn't know where the epicenter of terrorism is and not care if you love marijuana. I mean, that really was such a great example of the foolishness. And it always reminds me of that famous book by H.G. Wells called The Time Machine. Some of you if you don't read classics, then you wouldn't know about it. But there's an old movie. I remember seeing that movie when I was a kid. I think it was Rod Taylor, who was the scientist who goes back in time and he finds a group of people called I can't remember how to pronounce it. It's the Eloi. But they live above the ground, and below the ground are all these evil people Morlocks, who are trying to kill the people above ground. But the people above ground are just so happy. They're just so happy, and everything is just fine, and it's just all so good. And I remember thinking when I watched the movie, you know, as a kid, it was fantasy, and it was just like, interesting, but no, that'll never happen. But I'm beginning to think, you know, that maybe, well, and maybe some people feel the reason this is epidemic because it helps them to face, you know, all of these terrible things, because then they just don't care. Pass the Doritos. Who cares? You know, just give me another joint, whatever. I don't know. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. And so, but this is what's happening in our nation. People are drugging themselves, I guess, to personal pain. If they're paying attention to the headlines, I guess private pain. And so maybe if we're lucky, we can all become a society of those little innocent people wandering around above ground who were eventually, you know, killed by the people down below. So it's just amazing. We'll come back to that another time and open the phone lines. But I want to move on to something else, because yesterday or earlier this week, I presented you part of an article, but there was more to it, and I actually wanted to get into it a little bit more, and I'm going to do that right now. It's Laura Ingraham's news outlet is called LifeZet, and it is in LifeZet. It's called Middle America Hit with Staggering Immigration Surge. And so stay with me. In 1990, adult immigrants were hardly a factor in North Carolina's Randolph County, making up little more than 1% of all residents 18 and older. By 2014, the adult immigration population had ballooned 948%. The 8,950 foreign-born adults that year were 6.1% of the entire county population. That is a 683% increase in the immigrant share of the county's adult population. We're not prepared for them. We're going to be overrun by it, That's what they're saying. It's Arnold Lanier, county commissioner in Randolph, said that the huge influx of foreign residents has strained social services and limited budgets. But, of course, that's just one county. This study goes on to find that the number of counties where immigrants made up at least 20% of the adult population jumped from 44 in 1990 to 152 in 2014. Immigration is impacting an ever larger proportion of Americans. In 1990, 1 in 8 Americans lived in a county where at least 20% of adults were immigrants. By 2014, 1 in 3 people did. But now, I hasten to add, and they do make this point, because so many counties have not been affected yet, a lot of Americans are not terribly disturbed by out-of-control immigration because they don't see a difference in their own demographics. They don't see the strain on their social services. They don't see their schools absolutely bursting at the seams, their hospitals overrun. They're not seeing that yet, but it's coming. And so this article in LifeSet, we'll put this on our Facebook page. It says, Middle America hit with staggering immigration surge. And it traces the highest share of adult immigrants. I'm just going to give you a few of these counties. The highest is Miami-Dade, Florida, 61.9%. Queens, New York, 57.5%. Hudson, New Jersey, 49.5%. Maverick, Texas, 48.3%. Garza, Texas, 47.8%. And on and on it goes. So, but of course, there's another wrinkle to this because we don't know who's coming in because our borders are so out of control. We have concerns, and Catherine Herridge talked about it a little bit last night on Fox News. Let's listen.
We still don't have a national strategy to combat terrorist travel. Our refugee program is not as secure as it needs to be.
As the House Homeland Security Committee investigated terrorists exploiting the refugee stream, Secretary Kerry had briefed lawmakers on the administration's plan to expand the number of refugees allowed next year to 110,000, including an unknown increase from Syria. Republicans said the nearly 30% rise over this year ignores recent plots, including 3 alleged ISIS members arrested Tuesday at a German shelter.
It would appear that despite warnings from our own top national security officials and then independent events like what happened in Germany, that the administration is essentially doubling down on this Syrian refugee program.
As military pressure squeezes ISIS in Iraq, national security experts expect foreign fighters to fan out across Europe as they flow back to their native countries. One Homeland Security official acknowledged the challenge.
So it's not that we don't have perfect information on the individuals, so some of that information is destroyed. It does not mean we can't check other data sets.
Homeland Security recently upgraded its forensic labs in Virginia to expand its digitized library of counterfeit identification documents, as well as its latent fingerprint section, which pulls evidence from weapons, computers, and currency. Administration officials told lawmakers the vetting process has already denied several hundred applicants, and a much larger group is on hold.
Those officers who conduct those interviews are intensely trained, including, importantly, in truth detection.
But the threat is not a hypothetical, as the ISIS terrorist Abdul Hamid Aboud, who was behind November's Paris massacre, traveled with his team posing as refugees.
We know that jihadists are looking at every route into America, from sneaking across the southwest border to flying in as tourists and as refugees.
Law enforcement data suggests the majority of domestic terrorism cases since 9/11, about 80%, are tied to U.S. citizens and legal residents. And for intelligence analysts, it's very hard to predict the current and future impact of Syrian refugees on the homegrown threat.
All right. According to Reuters, Assistant U.S. Attorney General John Carlin said on Monday that more than 110 people have been publicly charged in federal court since late 2016 on counts related to the Islamic State militant group that has overrun much of Syria, that Syria and Iraq. That's here in the United States. And furthermore, the Department of Justice charged 60 people just last year with supporting or committing crimes because of their sympathies with the Islamic State. So that's a combination of concerns. It's not just the out-of-control borders. It's also who in the world's coming in. And related to that, you know, the largest terror attacks domestic terror attacks we've had, with the exception of 9/11, have been perpetrated. Well, even 9/11 was perpetrated with legal immigrant residents, for the most part. But San Bernardino, there are new details coming out about that. There's a new report revealed that 3 mystery people tried to rush the 2 terrorists, but these heroes were gunned down. Lots of bravery and heroism from police and paramedics. Remember, it was Syed Farouk and his wife Tashfeen Malik who walked into this inland regional center after Christmas party and started shooting. Here's a quote. It was the worst thing imaginable. Some people were quiet, hiding. Others were screaming or dying, grabbing at your legs because they wanted us to get them out. But our job at the moment was to keep going, the patrol officer said. That was the hardest part, stepping over them. A woman who was shot in the head asked a wounded coworker to call her mother to say goodbye. The coworker tried to comfort her and ask if she were okay. The victim said, "I'm not. I'm bleeding from my mouth," and then she closed her eyes for good. Police found a bag in the conference room that contained three pipe bombs. They didn't realize the bag was there until about 6 hours after the shooting. They believe these explosives were supposed to go off after first responders reached the scene. I digress to that. I go to that because this is really the great danger that we are in. It's not really a question of if, it's when. Because we are not controlling our borders, and because in spite of what they are claiming, we cannot properly vet people coming into this country. And on the flip side of that, we are releasing the prisoners in Guantanamo we have no doubt of where they are. We have vetted them, and yet we're releasing them. The president just released two more. He's released 161 since 2009. Of course, he's going to, you know, he's got to fulfill a campaign promise. That's important. And we know that, how many of them? I don't think I have the numbers in front of me. Let me just say that a lot of them have gone back into the battlefield. Lots of them. I think at least a third. And they're doing some really bad things. They're heading up some of the major attacks overseas. And this reminded me, maybe one of them was on this plane. I don't know, because here's the story from the London Daily Mail. Holidaymakers were forced to endure a terrifying two-hour flight alongside a migrant who repeatedly screamed, "Allahu Akbar," and "Death is coming," as it emerged that the Home Office is using budget airlines to deport illegal immigrants. Children were reduced to tears and travelers feared a terror attack until it became clear that the handcuffed man was being guarded by Home Office officials. There was no official explanation from the captain or crew as he kicked, thrashed about, and threatened passengers and crew. In an extraordinary 11-minute audio recording made by a passenger sitting just yards away, the man screamed "Allahu Akbar" 29 times and "Death is coming" 17 times and "We will die" 9 times. He was the unidentified migrant was being deported to Venice, kept up the crude and threatening behavior for nearly the entire length of the budget flight. Ironically, rather than calming worried passengers, EasyJet cabin crew ordered passengers to delete videos and pictures of the man that they had taken on mobile phones. Passengers were left terrified by the threats made by the handcuffed man on the plane. The man is thought to be a failed asylum seeker. They're taking him to Italy. Lucky Italy, right? Here's the transcript of this audio. EasyJet captain, ladies and gentlemen, once again, welcome on board. Migrant, Allahu Akbar, EasyJet captain. First of all, I want to apologize for the late departure. Migrant, hello, Allahu Akbar, today we will die. EasyJet captain, the weather is marvelous along the whole route. Migrant, today, Allahu Akbar, we will die, we will die, we will die, we will die, today we will die. This is all happening on this publicly owned people from all walks of life. Kids, one couple going on their honeymoon are having to endure this. In fact, they tell their story. Let's see if I can find their story. A couple who were traveling on the flight on the way to their honeymoon revealed how they feared for their lives. Lucy and Terrence O'Sullivan from Detling, Kent, were sitting only five rows in front of the man who was positioned at the back of the plane. Mrs. O'Sullivan, 33, whatever it says she is, I don't know what that word is. It was really scary. I felt threatened. I was tearful. The worst case scenario was that we weren't going to get off that plane alive because we didn't know who the person was, what the circumstances were, or anything. There was nothing explained to us. It was very daunting. When we got on board, the seats were moving, so he was obviously kicking or thrashing out. I thought someone was having a fit. But when we got up close, we could see people were restraining him. It's just an amazing story. And I have more, actually, to tell you of what's going on. An Australian member of their Senate made a speech on the floor that was very related to something like this and very controversial. I'm going to read parts of that, plus lots more news. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Freedom is an amazing gift from God, and He's given us an incredible number of heroes charged with the job of protecting it. I'm Eric Horner, and I'd like to invite you to be a part of doing something really special for those who've answered Freedom's call. On Saturday, September 17th, Operation Tankful of Love, in partnership with American Family Radio, will again be working to bless the men and women serving at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, with a gift of some free gas. It's a great way to say thank you to our soldiers for all they do. We'll be serving around 1,800 soldiers that day, and we need your help to make it happen. If you'd like to be a part of Operation Tankful of Love 2016, you can give us a call at 877-968-3742 to make your tax-deductible donation. That number again is 877-968-3742. You can also donate online by going to www.tankfuloflove.com. Won't you join us in being the hands and feet of Jesus to those who serve?
Currently on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg presents a brand new series called Lessons for Life, Volume 4. No matter your age, you'll learn valuable lessons on presenting the gospel, establishing a solid Christian worldview, and overcoming feelings of spiritual inadequacy. Listen weekdays to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR Talk and online at AFR.net.
We live in a day where we have the greatest evidence of the reliability of the text in the New Testament at the very time there's the greatest skepticism about it.
Information is not all that's needed to prove the authenticity of Scripture. We need understanding as well. Author and apologist Dr. James White offers plenty of both in the AFA Cultural Institute DVD, The Reliability of the New Testament. You'll find this resource and much more when you visit afastore.net.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. If Donald Trump wins this fall, it will probably be due substantially to his determination to stop importing additional jihadists. That common sense stance is overwhelmingly popular and sharply contrasts with President Obama's. Indeed, just yesterday, the White House announced that Mr. Obama would be seeking to add 110,000 refugees, an increase of 29%, including 11,000 from war-torn Syria, among them unknown numbers of actual or potential jihadists. That's because the FBI director has said they can't be properly vetted. Team Obama's response? It cut the time for doing so from 18 months to just 3. Its goal seems to be, as ever, fundamentally transforming America without regard for the implications for national security or public safety. That position has been rejected by Donald Trump, and it seems likely to be by the American people come November. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
It used to be cars were made in Flint and you couldn't drink the water in Mexico. Now the cars are made in Mexico and you can't drink the water in Flint.
That was Donald Trump on the campaign trail in Flint, Michigan yesterday. It was just, you know, I just thought I'd drop that in. And of course, he's talking about the fact that Ford Motor Company has decided to send the manufacturer of its smaller cars to Mexico, which means a transfer of jobs and resources and money. It's really tragic, really, for American workers. It is. Yes, they're going to leave their SUV and larger vehicles production here, but many are saying, and it's probably true, that if gas prices go in, of course, they'll take the hit, and then it'll be more loss for American workers. And that, honestly, this is a crucial time. There's no question about that. Because I promised, I want to kind of continue just for a second before I change the subject on what's happening internationally with Islamists. There's so much news every day that, you know, I have to weed through a lot of this. In Germany, their interior minister has warned that the country is home to more than 500 Islamic militants who could be capable of carrying out assaults on their own or members of hit teams. The Thomas de Maizière said that there were currently at least 520 potential attackers. He said another 360 relevant people were known to police. And because of their proximity to potential attackers, is that frightening? Germany's small. Germany's like one of our states. That's how much they have opened themselves up to danger. And by the way, in London, their first Muslim mayor has appointed a so-called, these words or terms are unfamiliar to us, but an integration deputy who worked with Jihadi John apologists. And Jihadi John was the jihadi who kept beheading people and is that deep British accent. Till he was finally killed, I think, in a drone strike. He was killed anyway. And so now the Muslim mayor of London has appointed a deputy integration mayor, Matthew Ryder. I'm not going to go into the details of that, but that's just an interesting story. But this is the one I do want to go into a little bit with you. This is a report from the Sydney Morning Herald, and it says Greens senators walked out of Pauline Hanson's incendiary first speech to the Senate after she claimed the nation was in danger of being swamped by Muslims, with its people, quote, living under Sharia law and treated as second-class citizens if urgent changes weren't made to immigration policies. The Queensland senator made her views on Islam and those who practice it clear just a few minutes into her first Senate speech, claiming they, quote, bear a culture and ideology which is incompatible with our own and calling for an end to all immigration. Migrants already within the borders who do not assimilate into what Senator Hanson described as Australia's culture could go back from where you came. If it would be of any help, I'll take you to the airport and wave goodbye with sincere best wishes, end quote. But the senator, who also called for an end to halal certification and for the ban on the construction of any further mosques with those existing to be monitored, said she did not believe the nation could remain secure under current policies. Our leaders continue to tell us to be tolerant and to embrace the good Muslims. But how should we tell the difference? There is no sign saying good Muslim or bad Muslim. How many lives will be lost or destroyed by trying to determine who is good and who is bad? Australia is now seeing changes in suburbs predominantly Muslim. Tolerance toward other Australians is no longer the case. Our law courts are disrespected and our prisons have become breeding grounds for Muslims to radicalize inmates. Muslims are imprisoned at almost three times the average rate. The rate of unemployed and public dependency is two to three times greater than the national average. Muslims are prominent in organized crime with associated violence and drug dealing. Antisocial behavior is rampant, fueled by hyper-masculine and misogynist culture. Multiple social surveys find that neighbors of Muslim settlement are suffering from collapsing social cohesion and fear of crime. Australians in general are more fearful. It was then that the Greens senators began leaving the chamber, but Senator Hanson, who had begun her speech with a shaky voice, was undeterred. Islam cannot have a significant presence in Australia if we are to live in an open, secular, and cohesive society. Never before in Australia's history have we seen civil unrest and terror associated with the so-called religion and followers of that faith. We have seen the destruction we have seen it is causing around the world. If we don't make changes now, there will be no hope in the future. Have no doubt that we will be living under Sharia law and treated as second-class citizens with second-class rights if we keep heading down the path with the attitude, she'll be right, mate. And that was, again, by a new Queensland senator in Australia. I read that to show you that this is epidemic worldwide. The concern is spreading everywhere. Another briefing I heard yesterday, I heard about the use of children by Islamic militants, Islamic radicals. How they are using them to behead people, how they are creating these breeding grounds where women are just giving birth to what they're, then they're training these kids as jihadis, and how they're training the kids then to fight. And then also the dilemma it's going to pose for future military members, especially American and Western civilization members of the military, the moral dilemma of fighting children on the battlefield, of having to kill children who are, you know, trained to kill them. Just the complications of that are absolutely, positively overwhelming. And I just would say before I transfer the subject, because I don't want to leave you in despair, the reason I'm not in despair is because I sense, I would be a fool not to sense, that there's something so much greater at work here. There is a bringing of all things, I think, into sort of a final passage. And there is a God, and it's not Allah. And the God that we serve, the God of the Bible, the Old and the New Testament, has pretty much laid things out. Maybe not the details so that we would understand them, but he is bringing things. You know, the world is becoming more and more filled with turmoil, and God is going to bring it to a conclusion. He will not always strive with man, as he says in the scripture. He won't always tolerate this. And so I think we are just watching. This is what an amazing time to be alive. What an amazing time to be alive. So now, meanwhile, back to some practical considerations, but important ones. There is a fight that I've discussed with you many times about the Obama administration wants to release control of the internet to an international body called ICANN. And they want to do it as of October the 1st. So time is running out. And of course, rather than me say it, let's just listen to this ad. Senator Cruz's office, he's been the real champion on this issue. This is the first thing he's really championed since he's been, his defeat in the primary. And this is the ad, which says it well. Let's listen.
Today, our country faces a threat to the internet as we know it.
Republican lawmakers are trying to stop the White House from handing over U.S. oversight of the internet.
Conservatives in the Congress are opposed to this.
The Obama administration intends to give away control of the internet to an international body akin to the United Nations.
Several Republican lawmakers are putting up a fight.
That the internet embodies the American idea of free speech. That very idea of free speech in the internet is under attack because the administration wants to see the core functions of the internet be transferred to a foreign body that doesn't share our idea of free speech.
Do we want China and Russia and Iran having the power to determine if a website is unacceptable, it's taken down?
We cannot allow control for Russia or China over U.S. free speech.
I will make certain that the Department of Commerce follows the law and we do not surrender control of the internet to some undefined international body.
And I urge my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to come together, to stand together and ensure that we protect freedom of the internet for generations to come. As President Ronald Reagan stated, freedom is never more than one generation from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States when men were free.
That was Senator Ted Cruz, and that's a spot that they have produced in order to fight this. We've been talking about this for months. I've spent more than one show trying to explain the dangers of this, and now we are coming rapidly upon the day when the transfer will be made. And, you know, let me say again that the Congress has tried to stop the president. This is a lawless action of this president. They have completely defunded the transfer, any of the money, the personnel, whatever it would take to make this change. And yet the president has ignored Congress and proceeded anyway. I would also note that in the Daily Caller reported, this was August the 29th, a report that, you remember those leaked documents from the Open Society, that's George Soros, big organization that now we know, many of us knew already, but we have proof of it now, is so deeply entrenched in funding and organizing and overseeing the left. And by the way, George Soros is one of the directors of Hillary Clinton's reelection campaign. George Soros Open Societies was calling for international regulation of the internet. That's what they want. They're pushing for it. And so this is why, you know, the left knows full well if they can silence people. Can you imagine who do you think is going to be silenced? I mean, I don't know if you speculated about that. It won't be the White House right now, and it won't be leftist causes. It certainly won't be George Soros' Open Society. It will be the basket of deplorables. It will be the Islamophobes, the homophobes, the xenophobes, the whatever, you fill in the blanks that Hillary Clinton itemized. Those are the ones whose words and content will be censored. We will not be free to express ourselves to one another. American Family Association will not be free to boycott Target. We will lose our freedoms if an international body is placed in charge of content on the internet. You know what? James Rosen did a report on it last night, an update, which we'll at least listen to part of it. And then I want to tell you an update I got in my inbox just this morning. James Rosen.
America built the internet, and we shouldn't be giving it away to our enemies.
In a new web video, a Senate floor speech and legislation, and now a Judiciary Subcommittee hearing Texas Senator Ted Cruz is taking on as his first public policy issue since losing the GOP nomination, a looming transfer of authority involving the World Wide Web. On October 1st, under a plan in place for two decades, the Commerce Department will cease to exercise contractual control over a Los Angeles-based nonprofit called the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN, the entity that approves the .coms, .gov, and other internet domain names. Instead, ICANN will be governed by a group of so-called global stakeholders. Republicans claim authoritarian regimes will be able to censor the internet.
If this transition goes forward, would the United States government have any greater ability to defend its position than would Russia or China or Iran?
The important point to take away from the Government Advisory Committee is that for it to render advice that has any force with the board, it has to be consensus advice, meaning it has to be advice to which no government objects. The United States does not wish to cede any sovereignty that we may have over .mil and .gov.
From ICANN's president and CEO, Goran Marby, an impassive Swedish telecom official fairly new to the job, one GOP lawmaker sought assurances about ICANN's physical location.
Is ICANN opposed to including requirements in ICANN's bylaws to definitively ensure that ICANN's place of incorporation never changes from California?
I think we fairly say that the protection is stronger than the justice bylaws.
Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware listed some of those who've written Congress to urge support of the transition.
You know what? I'm going to interrupt. I'm going to, Microsoft, Google, all the big ones, big tech companies are trying to get this to take place. Go figure. But I'm interrupting because we only have a few minutes left here, and I want to tell you there's a report from the Washington Free Beacon just this morning by Adam Credo, and this is what Adam has discovered. The international organization the Obama administration is pushing to hand control over the internet to has provided official accreditation to people who have transferred technology to Iran, worked with North Korea, and ordered murders for hire, according to congressional testimony that raised questions about the organization's practices. Experts familiar with ICANN, and ICANN is the organization that the Obama administration wants to handle control of the internet over to. Experts familiar with ICANN's structure testified before Congress on Wednesday that the organization has failed to act in a transparent and accountable fashion, raising questions about how it would operate free from U.S. government oversight. And in closing here, let me just say, a senior congressional source says proponents of the transition want us to simply take their word that freedom on the internet will be protected by ICANN, a multi-stakeholder organization consisting of 162 foreign countries, private corporations, and other interests, because its bylaws prevent it from fleeing U.S. jurisdiction and are designed to prevent any one bad actor from gaining too much influence. But bylaws can be changed, as was established during the hearing today. This is not the kind of organization the American people should feel confident in protecting their interests and protecting freedom on the internet. All right, so we're going to be hearing more about this today. And certainly, if you have a congressman or a senator, you need to say to them, do everything you can to stop the transfer of the control of the internet to ICANN, an international body. We'll put that clip on our Facebook page so you'll have a resource also. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.